What's up?
It is Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.
What's up?
Gotta match the mood, man.
Is it a somber mood?
Well, we'll get into it.
I don't think it is.
It's both.
It's both?
It's always somber when the season ends.
For sure.
In a game seven at home in the playoffs. Well,
no. Look, to be clear, for NHL players, the worst day of every year is the last day of your season. Unless that ends with you drinking champagne out of a specific cup that is much larger and cooler than any other professional team's trophy. Right? So no doubt. But it does feel today, listening to Canucks radio earlier in the day, Halford and Bruff specifically, watching the chatter on Twitter, it doesn't feel very elegiac today. Like, it feels much more celebratory.
I think there's a steady diet of both.
Mm.
And I think that's fair. And I think this dichotomy is going to take up a lot of the show today, talking about the two sides of the coin. Right?
The what went wrong, the what comes next.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of time. But I do think there's been a steady diet of both that disappointment while also that positivity and that celebratory element as well. It is Jamie Dodd here along with my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And of course, lots and lots to get into today. So let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 21st. And first of all, I said go to the whiteboard instead of open the whiteboard. I'm making progress just as the Canucks season comes to an end. But we'll start with the headlines, which of course is that Canucks season is over after a 3-2 Game 7 loss to the Oilers in the second round last night at Rogers Arena. It was 3-0. It looked very, very hopeless, very lifeless for much of the game. Two late third period goals make it 3-2, but no miracle comeback in the offing this time for the Canucks. And, you know, we can focus on the game, we can focus on the series, we can kind of then zoom out, focus on the season as a whole, what's to come. But looking at that game, looking at that series, really, the way I would frame it is their struggles to generate offense in the playoffs finally caught up to them last night in a fatal way. Not enough scoring, either at 5-on-5 or on the power play, as we saw last night. And that, there's lots of other things we can talk about, lots of reasons for this, but to me, that's the succinct what did them in last night thing, is the lack of offense.
Well, I don't think you can ignore the Besser factor, because one thing that I really noticed or thought watching that game, and I really think the stark relief with what the Canucks did in the last 8 minutes, like the moment Garland scored for about 5 minutes, they played with a totally different, like an unrecognizable level of energy versus what they'd had through 55. Like that urgency wasn't there. It's like, having got to this point in the season, having sustained and overcome, you know, from the perspective of the, we're a playoff team if everything goes our way, where we want to get to is to be a team that can win when things don't go our way. Like, they surpassed that, right? They got to that next level. You lose Demko, but that final gut punch right before the biggest game of the season, it reminded me, honestly, of the Avalanche performance in Game 4 against the Dallas Stars, which isn't to say, like, and I bring that up that example, because it's not like an immaturity thing. It's not even criticism of the team. Like, we've seen that sudden departure of key player, especially leading goal scorer,
yep,
can just kind of zap a team's energy temporarily. And I think it just happened to the Canucks at possibly the worst time, until McLeod turned it over to Garland, who made no mistake, and then the crowd kind of got them into it momentarily. But, you know, even then, they score the 3-2 goal. It's a pretty fortunate, heroic point shot that beats Skinner with, you know, Matthias Ekholm setting the deflection. The Oilers start collecting mistakes, right? I mean, McLeod's turnover, Dreisaitl lost a man and gave up a partial breakaway to Phil DiGiuseppe. DiGiuseppe missed the net. Obviously, you had, so to set up the Hronek goal, you had, I know everyone is really talking about Evan Bouchard in like terms like, whoa, he outperformed Quinn Hughes, blah, blah, whatever. The weight that he put on a clearing attempt to cause that icing was one of the worst mistakes that the Oilers made in the last 10 minutes. I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? Because you know, like in the playoffs, you leave the door open. You just know.
The Oilers messed around. They almost found out.
They narrowly avoided
finding out.
Well, and especially against this Canucks team. Like, this Canucks team is hard to kill. One thing you'd say about this Canucks team, or I'd say about this Canucks team, unreservedly, and I don't think we need to bleep this out, but Dom, you can tell me later.
Exciting.
They had balls.
No, we don't need to bleep that out.
This team had balls, man. Just straight up. It was awesome. Now, after Knobloch, who I thought had a really good series, and we'll get into this a little bit. After Knobloch called the timeout, 3-2, the Canucks didn't generate another shot on goal.
No, there was not enough push. There was not, and I know Tockett talked about like the last shot from Miller that goes off Zadorov, but there wasn't that one chance you could look at and be like, oh, that was the one, but they saved it or it hit the post or something. You know what I mean? There wasn't that one grade A chance to kind of hang your hat on after that point.
They didn't play well. They didn't play well, period. And I think it goes beyond this game. Like, at the pointy end of the series, after the Canucks came out in Game 5 and outplayed the Oilers, one of the two games in the series where they were the better team. Because that, I think, it went 7, but the Oilers were the better team 5 of 7. Right? After that, the Oilers outscored the Canucks 8-3 across Game 6 and 7 and outshot them 56-32. And that's with the Canucks putting up a lot of that like margin down 3-0 in the back half
of Game 7.
So it's like it was actually even more lopsided in some ways than
those
numbers make it look.
Well, at one point, the shots last night were like, what, 22-4? 22-4,
and the score at that point was 2-0. And then the Canucks had a mini push, and then Sam Lafferty, complete non-entity in the playoffs, by the way, gets that bad tripping call in the offensive zone, and then Ryan Nugent-Hopkins capitalizes, and that's the game. Like, you know.
And just to your point about the emotional impact of losing Besser, it felt like they needed something to go their way in the first period to counteract that. And instead, right, Mikheyev misses the break, the like in-close breakaway attempt. Nice move. Skinner beat, but just can't finish.
But they got the save. Like, you got to rally around that save.
Sure, but then they needed to do something else. Like, they needed to do something in addition to getting the save.
A big hit.
And then look at the Mikheyev miss and then the 4-minute power play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you needed something to go right in that type of moment to kind of like, okay, hey, we're flushing the Besser thing. We're on the front foot. We're doing this. And instead they go against you. And I think that kind of did it.
You know, it's funny. If the Oilers had the first power play, first of all, the team with the first power play opportunity in this series lost every game. Weird.
And a lot of times they scored on that power play early in the game,
certainly the Oilers.
Yeah. Canucks game two.
Yeah, that's true. It's just hard for me to imagine the Canucks power play scoring after a performance like last night. If the Canucks' first penalty, so the Oilers' first power play opportunity had been at the end of the first, and it ends with that like Dreisaitl shot that deflects mildly off Cole that Seelovs makes that incredible robbery on.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that might be the sort of thing where it's like you get out of the period and you're like, wow, we are still in this. Maybe that's it, you know, but that momentum sapping 3 minutes and 46 seconds.
Tough.
You know, there is a certain irony, though, to the only scoring chance on that power play opportunity going to the Edmonton Oilers version of Ilya Mikheyev.
Yes, to Connor Brown, the snake bit penalty killing defensive guy.
Yeah, really good. I found a certain amount of irony. The turnover happens and the Oilers go the other way, and no one in the press box leaned forward. You know what I mean? Like, I, like, looked up and down, and, like, no one even leaned forward. There was literally no squeaky bums. It was just, like...
I was like, oh, it's Connor Brown.
That's funny. Anyway, I just think, ultimately, the Oilers put together a mauling. At the pointy end of this series, the Oilers' class, their quality showed through. And, look, there's a tell, in my opinion, in the reaction of Canucks fans last night. Beautiful moment with the crowd... quite rightly, giving this team their flowers. It was a dream season, in my opinion, right? And a dream season that I'm not trying to like write off either as a one and done. This wasn't team sneaks into the playoffs, wins a round, hangs tough against favorite opponent. This isn't the bubble, if you even count the bubble, right? This was a 50-win team that won the division, that was heavily favored and executed in the first round. And that took a heavily favored team to 7 games, you know, it's just different. There's a material thing to celebrate here in terms of how this Canucks team exceeded expectations, in terms of how unexpected it was, in terms of the feeling. And I loved Rick Tocchet's, you know, they put respect back in this yep. jersey and in this city. An echo, by the way, of what Arthur Griffiths once told Pat Quinn when he hired him, right? We're hiring you to bring respectability to the franchise, right? Not a Stanley Cup, respectability. But there's still a tell here in that if the Oilers had lost that game, even if the Canucks had gone up 3-2 and it had been the Oilers mounting the furious comeback, right? Like, I'm not saying if the Oilers had coughed away that game the way they almost did, it would have felt like this historic blown opportunity. People in Edmonton would have called it a choke.
Uh-huh.
It would have been awful, right? And for the Canucks, it's like, wow, what a great season. That's disappointing. And there's a tell in that there's still work to be done. There's still distance to travel, right? There's all these like subtle hints as much as once you get into a playoff series, once it gets going long, people start to puff their chest out and do the like, we're right there. There are so many tells along the way, so many signposts along the way that, hey, there's still a material gap between the Oilers and the Canucks. And the 8-3 scoreline just reinforces
it. And part of the difference in reaction that would have happened is also goes back to preseason expectations.
100%.
But I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, because I also think it reflects the chances that both fan bases feel the team would have in the Western Conference Finals and going beyond. Right?
Right.
Like, we already are getting a ton of texts like, hey, they're probably not going to beat Dallas even if they win. I just want to beat the Oilers. Right? And I think that was a very fair point of view to have. On Rick Tocchet, as we go through some of the headlines, and I want to talk a little bit about the crowd and the crowd reaction at the end at some point as well. And I don't ask this with any sense of like judgment or criticism of Rick Tocchet. Were you surprised at the largely very positive tone of his post-game comments last night, kind of in the wake of a disappointing loss?
No.
And again, I'm not saying like he should have had a different tone. I just want to get your take on it, because it did stand out.
Did you watch the scrum?
Yeah.
So you know that I was surprised enough to ask him about it.
Yes. Well, and ask him specifically, like, how are you able to be kind of moved past it seemingly already?
So in my experience, right, NHL head coaches, NHL general managers, NHL players, you lose in the playoffs, and you know what you don't do for the next week and a half? Watch the playoffs.
Mm.
You know, like, I've very rarely met a professional hockey player, a professional hockey coach, or, like, do you know how deranged these people are in terms of how competitive they are, right? Like, they are completely unique in terms of just how aggressively and competitively they're wired. You have to be to excel at a sport to this level, right? To compete in the NHL. And it's pretty rare to be able to like reflect in that manner. Now, I think it's a good thing. I think it's healthy to be able to have perspective even while coping with or processing, you know, a result in real time. I think it's leadership to be able to speak to everything the club accomplished right off the bat. But certainly no Canucks players were quite there yet, right? They were emotional, and fair enough, right? There was a real sense of loss. You could see a lot of glazed eyes in that locker room. Quinn Hughes, Connor Garland, JT Miller. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I just thought it was impressive more than anything.
Like, mm-hmm.
I thought it was a testament in part to what has made Tocchet so good for this team. And you know, as much as like the X's and O's have been like thoughtfully executed and in some areas masterful and others maybe a little bit lacking, like the power play, right? I think managing the power play in addition to all the responsibilities that come with being a head coach in the Vancouver market, that might be too big a portfolio. That was my reaction last summer. I disabused myself of it when the club got super hot for 6 weeks and I bought in. Again, one of my worst takes of the year was I bought into the early success of the Canucks power play. But, you know, with the way that it sort of found itself running quickly out of answers, you know, I think that's a worthwhile question to be asked at locker room cleanout day. I think it's a worthwhile thing to consider. But I think the emotional intelligence that Tocchet showed throughout this season is what really impressed me, set me apart. The ability to challenge his team and always get that response, the way that his like focus on line changes, right? Like his focus on like this small behavioral tweaks that the team needed to make as a group, and how if you do that, some of the rest of the habits fall into place kind of naturally, right? It's the little stuff that matters.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he'd use all this language about staples, and then he didn't have to keep doing it because the players were echoing it, you know, and his language changed, and he almost like got to – it's that emotional intelligence that I think makes this head coach so impressive. So I just thought it – was a good, like, it was emblematic of that.
I agree with a lot of that. I mean, I do think it's another of the one the tells that you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't really have that, you know, if Edmonton had lost that game, obviously you're getting a very different press conference from Chris Knobloch after the game than you got from Rick Tocchet.
Oh, yeah.
With the Canucks losing, right? And again, that reflects the expectations for the team preseason, the expectations going forward from that point. And, you know, somebody texted in, Rick knew a long time ago that Game 7, Round 2 was an overachievement. I don't know about overachievement. I mean, they won their division. They were favored in the first round. You expected, like, at a certain point, the expectations shifted from where they were preseason to get to round two, at least.
I think it's fair to say that they collided head on with their absolute ceiling.
Yes, that's fair. That's a fair way of putting it. And I think Rick Tocchet's positivity after it really kind of mirrored the reaction from the fans at the end of the series as well, right? And somebody texted in, how could this be a dream season? What expectations do we have? No wonder it's such a sorry franchise.
I want to note, there's at least a streak of me. People won't be shocked because yeah. I live on a hill and make fun of the Who's and then ruin their holidays. But there's at least a part of me that generally agrees with the direction of that comment, if not like the tone and time of it. I do think for this to really matter and be celebrated,
mm-hmm.
it needs to be the start
uh-huh.
of something durable as opposed to another one-off like 2020 was. The proof will be in the pudding going forward. There are very tough decisions looming on the horizon. And certainly when you get to the level you want to get to, right, when you get to the level that this team should get to, given some of the talent on this roster and its age, we want to be covering a series where if the Canucks lose in the second round, it's a massive disappointment because everyone believes that the club really has a shot, right? That they're not playing a team that's a 3-1 that has 3-1 odds to win the cup in a game 7 while they have 12-1 odds. Like that's not disrespect. That was a fair read. Given what we saw, 22-4 shots in a do-or-die Game 7 is, you know, it tells you everything.
And I think that text comes down to kind of a philosophical thing. Like, can any sports team have a successful season if they don't win the championship, right? And some people are going to say,
you know how
no.
much I hate this.
I think the answer is, yes, you can have a successful season without winning the cup, right? Some people disagree with that. Now,
I actually think the NHL needs to find ways to make it. Yeah,
yeah,
like, winning the President's Trophy should be its own achievement that's actually celebrated. In mid-season tournament, you know how much I'd like that. Like, you know, anyway.
But specifically on this Canucks team, right? So they get the, you know, first of all, the crowd was amazing last night. Even trying, you know, organically getting the chance going in the third period, trying to jumpstart a comeback. Super, super loud, obviously, after the 3-1 and 3-2 goals. And then they stay there. Go Canucks, go chants. Huge standing ovation for the players as they leave the ice. None of that is a surprise. I think that was all absolutely justified. But to the texter's point a little bit, and to your point saying the most important thing now going forward is that this isn't a one-off, you get kind of one nice-to-be-there playoff appearance as a team. You know what I mean? One, like, hey, we made the playoffs, and that's awesome, and we're really happy about that. You get that once, and this was the Canucks.
Yeah.
Now the real expectations set in.
Yeah.
You only get that sort of reaction for a second round exit one time as a team. They've used theirs. It was 100% justified. People should be really excited about it. But the kind of honeymoon, the Rick Tocchet honeymoon, is also over. And going forward, the expectation, and I don't mean that because of like mistakes Rick Tocchet made. I just mean the honeymoon for this iteration of the team. What comes with having a dream season like this is, okay, now go out and match it. Be better. If you can meet those raised expectations and exceed them again.
Well, you're going to have to be better. Like this team's going to be hard to keep together. We know this. Management knows this. They've been planning for it for months, right? We all saw the progress made. And one thing that I do think matters because, you know, I was pretty critical of the direction that this club took to get to this point, in part because I worried about the ceiling. I worried about it capping the ceiling of this team. But the result was so excellent, right? Like, if you're going to go short term and it's going to hit like this,
mm-hmm.
well, I think you build yourself quite fairly the goodwill, right? That, okay, what they tried worked. Maybe they can get this to the next level. But the moving from, you know, the 18th best team in the league to the 12th or something, right? That's a difficult step. Moving from the 12th best team to the 5th,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole different magnitude of difficulty, right? Like, that's exceptionally difficult, especially when you don't have a ton of draft capital or prospects, right? Like, this club's going to have a narrow path to get to that next point. We all kind of knew this. That was baked in. And that kind of starts this summer with which playoff heroes can they afford to sign, right? The fact that this club hedged going into the season, by the way, quite prudently, given what this club had accomplished in recent years, right? The and that's the biggest difference, by the way, between this and like 2020. They're not committed structurally in terms of how the contracts are set up, especially given the horse trading proclivities of this Canucks management group. They're not locked in to like any particular build. They have an untangled cap situation, as Jim Rutherford would say. They have meaningful options. But the downside of that is they also haven't locked in so much of the upside that they netted over the course of the season, like Zadorov yep. performing exceptionally and Hronek putting up 50 points and elevating Quinn Hughes. Teddy Bluger almost hitting 30 points, right? Sam Lafferty scoring 10-plus goals. Dakota Joshua becoming a top-six forward for this team in the playoffs. Like, Tyler Myers, best season of his career, right? Up and down the lineup, all of this upside isn't captured in terms of the club having, like, cost certainty on any of it. So, you know, I think where we kind of come to is this season was this moment where Vancouver's best players leveled up, right? JT Miller made a huge step defensively. Quinn Hughes, we all know what happened, right? Like, the way that he unlocked more of his offensive game and became the best defenseman on the planet, outrageous stuff. Even Elias Pettersson, with how the second half of the season went, like, became imposing in the faceoff dot. You know, I don't know if where his health was at late in the year. I can tell you that he had a huge gash on his face and needed multiple shots of freezing
mm-hmm.
to get stitches inside his lip after the McLeod high stick yesterday. He'll be looking pretty all summer, which is nice for him. The fact remains that all of these young players, all of the Canucks core group kind of leveled up and were better supported by a really like robust collection of glue guys that this organization was able to identify and bring in on relatively low risk, relative affordable contracts. They hit in volume on the sorts of glue guys that made it so that when Quinn Hughes took a breather, the Canucks weren't getting wildly outscored. And that allowed those players to make the difference as this season went along. But the next iteration, like what this club now needs to add, is the trickier part, right? Which is more really great players
yeah.
to support them. Like another star level talent or two, you know? And that's sort of where last, like coming into this season, I would say the record's a little more mixed. I mean, Hronek, we know the impact that we saw in the first half. I think we have questions about what we saw in the second half. I think we have questions about how much he contributes to versus benefits from playing with Quinn Hughes. Kuzmenko was supposed to kind of be that other guy. That didn't really work out this season, not with this coach anyway. And so, and you know, we saw the LA Kings step into it with this, right? Where you're trying to go from good to great.
A bunch of good players to a great player, and then you end up just giving away a bunch of good players.
Right. Well, and it's what makes the build in Vegas special. Vegas keeps knocking it out of the park,
yep.
going from like Alex Tuch and Peyton Krebs to Eichel.
Yeah.
And you know, on and on, right? Like, it's a really hard trick to pull off. And that kind of feels like where the Canucks are. They have the flexibility to do it. They don't have a full retinue of draft picks, but they have some prospect value, Lekaramäki and Volander. And they obviously have a team now that recorded 109 points in 150-plus games and advanced to the second round, game seven, one game from the conference final. So, you know, there's a lot to hang your hat on and a lot of work to do to make sure that this wasn't like a low-bar one-off. but instead the start of something really meaningful and durable in the city.
And obviously we've got a lot of time to keep breaking down the season that was, looking ahead to the summer. Just one quick note for the broadsheet element of the whiteboard. And obviously the whiteboard is going to change in some fashion here going forward now that the Canucks are done playing games. On your point about what they do this summer, Elliot Friedman on the Jeff Merrick Show noting today, just kind of generally, and this is a good reminder for everyone, expect the unexpected when it comes to Jim Rutherford. So we're kind of looking at it as, hey, they've got these UFAs. Who can they afford to keep? Who's going to be too expensive? But there's always another level to it. There's always something, another shoe that could potentially drop with Jim Rutherford. And that's emphasized by Elliot Friedman today on the Jeff Merrick Show.
Yeah, and that's the right call.
Yeah.
You know, the right approach here is to focus ruthlessly on getting better, not to show undue loyalty to a group that massively overachieved over the course of the season.
Playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Cargo Express. International shipping, importing, and exporting. Explore their services or get a quote at allcargoexpress.com. Lots more breaking down the Game 7 loss, the end of the playoffs, the season as a whole here for the Vancouver Canucks, all coming up on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.